Meet. Welcome to everyone, and I'd like to call the March meeting of the Ulster County Commission on Reapportionment to order. You spoke about the typos already, so I don't have to go into that, I guess. I just have to apparently raise my voice a little bit higher so I don't sound like Ken. Sorry, Ken. can approve the minutes of the February 10th meeting
with the typos corrected.
No other issues with them? Okay.
So moved.
So moved. Second. Thank you. Okay. And we have a presentation this evening by the CityGate GIS. Is this with Rob and Dennis?
Yes, I believe they're both on, and
we're on. But Fred is from CityGate, and he will be doing the presentation.
Fred is here. Let me ask if is it Fred Hazain?
Hijazi.
Okay, I see he's there. He's got his audio on, but he didn't get. There we go. We should be seeing him momentarily.
I didn't do video because. I don't know. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
I didn't do video because I haven't had a vaccine and I haven't been to the hair cutting place.
You would be in good company.
Yeah, I thought I did. I don't scare you guys on the first presentation. But I'm here to show software, so not myself. So whenever you guys are ready, I can kind of get into talking about it.
Okay. Whenever you're ready, Fred.
All right. So I wasn't going to spend too much time talking about PowerPoints and whatnot. I'll just kind of briefly explain our company and what we do, and then we can kind of get into maybe talking about how things work from a software perspective. Can you guys see my screen that I shared?
Yes,
I can see it.
All right, perfect. So we've been doing redistricting software since mid-90s, and we generally produce software for states and localities in the U.S., but we've also done Canada and a few other countries where they've used our software. I believe we worked with you guys last time in 2010. I don't think all of you guys were present back then, but some of you were. And things have come a little ways as far as what you can and can't do on computers and mapping. So we have a lot of new capability, but the biggest thing is the availability of online maps and the ability to allow others to participate in the process. And I think that's something that you guys have expressed as being important. So
Fred, what we're seeing is a login.
Yeah, I haven't logged in yet.
Oh, okay. I'm just wondering if that was what you intended.
Yeah, no, I haven't logged in yet. I was gonna get into it, and I just had a map of Arkansas up. Obviously, it's much bigger than your county, but I can show the functionality the same here. So anyway, what we provide as far as capability goes, we have a desktop application, which is what I'm gonna show, and that desktop application, once you create a plan, you can then share that online in a number of different ways. You can share it so that people can comment on it, so they can see a picture of the plan as you created it, and then they can place their comments on it, and then the person who's fixing the plan on the desktop can see those comments and respond to it. You can place the plans out there for people to just simply view and no comment. Then we also have the ability for people to create their own plans and submit them. And then finally, we have the ability for folks to draw their communities of interest, and then those communities of interest show up as areas inside the map here that I'm working on. And then I can, if I'm the line drawer, I can decide, okay, I want to make sure that this community is kept together, or if I need to split somebody, at least I know that I'm doing it, as opposed to finding out at a public hearing. So that's the general basics of what we provide in software. Before I get started, is there any specific concerns that you guys have that you want me to cover? All right. So this is a the basic map that comes up when I start the software. And before I get into a plan, I'll just zoom around a little bit and you guys can see how it works. So the orange lines in this case are precinct boundaries. And then as we get further in, the software will show the block boundaries. This is census data. And as I get further in, it'll show for me the street names and then the footprint of the buildings in the area. And this map is nationwide, so it really doesn't matter where I look. The results are very similar as far as what features show up on the map. So here we're outside of Albany, and the map is essentially the same map. And while I'm working, I have an option of looking at different types of maps. So I can go in here and say, well, this white background is nice, but what I really want to see is imagery. So I'm going to change my map type to an imagery type map. And now what happens is when I zoom in, I'll see the imagery background behind my census data. And depending on what kind of work I'm doing, I may decide to use other kinds of maps. Sometimes when you're working in Western United States, for example, where geography and elevation makes a difference, what we'll do is we'll switch to a map that shows elevations like this. So then we can actually see the maps like this. And of course, as I mentioned, this goes right underneath of our census data, so that while we're working, we can actually see if the boundaries are following certain geographic features or whatnot. Generally, we use this white base map because it's easier on the eye as far as looking at the background of the districts. So I'm going to just open up a plan and just kind of show how the assignment process is done. And actually, I'll open up a plan that I created earlier. So this is a Senate plan in the case of Arkansas. And right now, for at least for them, we're using, because the census data, as was mentioned, is postponed till end of September, there is other data from the Census Bureau available that we can use. And the Census Bureau does a rolling tabulation called the American Community Survey. So what used to be on the long form of the census is now in what's called the ACS, American Community Survey. And the latest ACS is for 2019. So we have data for 2019 population. So because of the data being delayed in the case of Arkansas, they want to start to see what the boundaries might look like and what districts need to grow and which ones need to shrink based on that data. And that's what we're looking at here on the screen. So if I look at the map, immediately the software throws on here next to the district numbers a little arrow, either up or down or checkbox, that says this district is within tolerance, it needs to shrink, or it needs to grow. And it also shows that in a spreadsheet down below. So this is just a regular Excel spreadsheet if you've ever used one. And in this case, it's showing the ACS 2019 for me, which is that's what I was interested in. It will show for me the total population in a particular district. So that's the all persons. My target, which is where I want to be, that's my ideal population. How far am I off from where I want to be in percentage, and how much is that in actual people? So kind of quickly I can tell, like looking at District 1, it needs to shrink by 27,829 people. District 5 is actually good. It's within tolerance, 3.37% tolerance. For them, it's 5% up or down. That's what their settings are.
Well, that's what we used last time as well.
Okay, that's a common setting for the U.S. In Canada, it's 25%, so it's a lot easier. And so if I want to look at one of these districts, let's say if I wanted to look at district, let's look at 22 because it has 21 right next to it. That needs, one needs to go up, one needs to go down. So if I go to, I'm going to set my layer to precincts, and I'm going to say go to district 22. So when I do that, the software kind of pops me into it. And then it scrolls down. I'm down by 10,000 people, and I need to go up from here. So I can now just go into my edit tools and go into assignment and say, okay, I'm going to pick this precinct and assign it to 22. And that's what happens. It just moved it, and then it recalculated the number. So now I'm 5% down. And if I add more, then I actually went over. So now I need to come down. So that's the basics of redistricting. And the software gives you a lot of different tools for looking at demographics and population and whatnot. I don't want to kind of get too deep into this, but before I kind of get into anything else, is there any questions on what I just showed? So within the software, we also
I just had to unmute myself. I had a question. So this district looks a little gerrymandered with that little L out around Lake City. What if I wanted to put those two districts back and take out that little L shape? Hard is that?
To go back to the way that it was and then take out this L shape?
Yes.
Yeah, I can just undo it and say I don't want to do what I just did, which is take up the red is what it used to be, so it's showing that for me. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to undo the one edit and then the second edit that I just did. So I'm running a lot of different things. So now I'm here, and then I can say, okay, I actually want to look at this area here and add this to my district. So then I'll just do that. And then, of course, the numbers get calculated accordingly. And if I want to see some, I mean, normally when I'm working out, I don't do it blindly like this. I actually will go in here and look at population numbers. And when I am looking at population numbers, actually these numbers that are showing here, the 2271 and the 11,000 and the 7761, these are the populations of each of these precincts. So I can kind of tell how many people I'm going to have before I actually assign it. And I can even do something like I want to see not just total population, I also want to see Black and Hispanic population. So now I have total population, Black population, Hispanic population stacked on top of each other. So I can kind of see where I'm going to go as I'm drawing my districts. So, as I said, there's a bunch of different tools that allow you to do these things. Once we're happy with it, there's a number of analytical tools. I can compare one plan with another plan. I can check plan for error. So if I click that, I can check for discontinuities in the plan. And it says 32 discontinuities. So if I go in here and say, okay, District 1 is fine, District 2 is fine, all the way till 5. 5 has one discontinuity. So if I click it, it'll take me out to District 5. It'll say Part 1, which is right here, is the big one, and then Part 2 is this little piece that got accidentally assigned to District 5 in the middle of a river. So then I can ask the software to suggest a solution, which is put it in District 17. And that it does that for my entire plan. I can also check for unassigned areas. So if anything got accidentally left out, in this case, there are 21 unassigned areas, like this little piece on the border of Louisiana got left unassigned. So this little piece here was left unassigned. The software finds it and then recommends solution to fix it. So
we have issues like that all the time when we did it last time. A lot of this is an upgrade from last time, but I don't think last time you had the recommended solution. I think that's new.
Yeah, we didn't have the recommended solution, of course, that got added. So beyond that, there are tools for doing compactness analysis. There are reporting tools. There are map creation tools. If I go into my reports, for example, we have a new report that's kind of popular. I'll just kind of show how it works. It's called a district member snapshot. I'll just run it on one district.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Fawn, Travis is in the waiting room, if you wouldn't mind letting him in.
Sorry.
No worries.
I guess we have a couple people in there. I was so involved watching this. And Regis is, okay.
Yeah, let me, I have to share that report, figure out how to do that.
Sorry, Travis. Thanks, Sarah.
So when you do a report, this is an example report. In this case, it provides it shows a district. It gives it a little map, how many people are in the district, what's the ideal population, how far are you from ideal population, what the size of the district is, and then if there is any cities in the district, it'll list them and provide some demographics. They wanted to see incumbents in there, so if there were any incumbents inside the district, it would show that. And if they're outside the district, it would show that. So this is an example of that kind of a report. So going back to the software. So one of the key things is the ability to share plans online and be able to get comments back. I'll kind of show that how that integration works. So I'm going to close this plan and create a simpler plan so that we can kind of do this quickly. So this is a smaller plan. It's incomplete, but for the purposes of doing a demo, it'll work. So in the software, we have something called a menu called Data Exchange, and here I get to upload and share plans with individuals or the members of the public. So if I click that, I can say I'm interested in sharing this plan for commenting, and I have a number of ways of doing that. I can set it up so that everybody can see everybody else's comments, or I can set it up so that everybody can see that a comment was placed, but they won't know what the comment is. Or I can set it up so the comments are only visible to the person that placed it. So I'm going to say all comments visible, upload plan for commenting. So I'm going to just click that. And it exists. Do I want to update it? Yes, I do. So What it will do is it'll generate what's called a QR code. So if you were doing this in a public setting, you could actually just have people hold their phone up to it and be able to open up the commenting page so they could put their comments right there on their phone. But if they didn't, you could share the link online, and I'm going to do that. And then I'll share with you guys what that looks like. So I'm going to share that screen. So this is the plan we just uploaded, and it comes up over Google. I'm going to change the background map to the standard Google map. So this is the plan. And if I want to place a comment here, I can then go in here and say add a comment. And maybe, I don't know, put it here and say I dislike it, provide my name, and say what's up with this coming down in the district. So add that as my comment. And so the comment hasn't been validated. That's why it's got a question mark in it. So now what I'm going to do is go back to the software. And if I go to my area where I can see comments, this thing was called Fred New AR Plan. And there's Fred New AR Plan. It's got online commenting. I'm going to add it as an overlay. And it's going to say OK. And there's that comment I just placed online. And if I click it, it'll show the comment, what's up with this coming down in the district. And it will show the time that it was done. So this kind of gives me a way to interact with the public really easily and be able to see where people are having issues and where they're commenting on particular plans so that I can then go ahead and address it. We've used this very successfully in school redistricting, which tends to be a lot more contentious, and address the parents' comments before they came to the public hearing, or at least be aware that this is an area that's going to be an issue, and then explain upfront what the reasoning was for picking one adjustment over another. We also have a similar tool for communities of interest. So that's what this thing is. You can enable collection or disable it. And then once people provide their communities of interest, you can download it as an overlay. And then they show up in these little boundaries like this. Let me turn these labels off. You can display them. And then as you're making your redistricting plans, you can decide whether you're going to split it or not split it, or at least you're aware of it at that point. Those are sort of the ways we engage with the community. The other side of this is the ability to actually edit plans. So I will share how that works, and then that will be it for my part of the presentation. So this is the, great, it logged me off. When you log into it, it basically gives you a dashboard that allows you to communicate with other people. So if I have questions or if I'm working with other people, I have, you know, all the people that are on here, and I can say, you know, I want to send a message to them. And then if I have a question about something, this is my way of communicating. And then I have my plan manager. I can go in here and manage my plans. I can validate them after I've done the plan. This is me as a member of the public. And then submit the plan for review by you guys. So the plan goes through a check at that point, the validate check. And if it's complete and within appropriate deviation, then the plan gets submitted for review. And then if I open the plan, so it's similar to the desktop application we have, except it runs on the internet and it's using a Google base map, and I can select things and decide what district I want to put them in. Oops, what district I want to put it in, and then make assignments like that. It's very simple, but it allows the members of the public to make these make plans and then submit them for redistricting to be for the redistricting commission to consider. Any questions on anything?
I have a quick question. This is Andy. I was curious to know how much of the data can be imported into the program and how much of it needs to be entered. For example, do we have the ability to import like school districts and other local legislative districts, or would we need to figure those out ourselves and then enter them in?
So you can, this does, let me go back to the software again. There are a number of ways of bringing in additional data. And I'll kind of go over that. So you can just simply go into here and add what's called a shapefile, which is a format for map data, which the county also uses. So if you have school district, you can just add them here. Mm-hmm. And we do that frequently. The other way to do it is add online content. So for example, there are map servers that have data on them, and I might be interested in adding that information. And so if I decide to do that, I can go to my access online content, and then I can go online, find a map service and add them. And I've done a few of them here. So for Alaska, I wanted to add the boundaries for the Alaska Native corporations. So I added that as a layer. And for example, if I wanted to see a COVID map of the U.S., that's not a redistricting layer per se. It's just a separate layer that I would want to add to my map. And if I hit yes, it will then show it for the whole U.S. like that.
And last time we did add two districts. I created a legislature location map, which we didn't use at all. And then we added the election boundaries. So that was the only thing we added to it otherwise.
Okay. And those blocks that you were clicking on, Fred, to add and subtract additional people to the thing, those are like census blocks, right?
I was using precinct boundaries, but you can use census blocks. It doesn't really make any difference.
Okay.
So I can change this and go to down to the blocks to do it.
Got it. And voting precincts are something that's sort of already loaded into the maps to begin with.
Exactly. The Census Bureau calls them voting districts. That's what we call them, VTDs. You'll see that term show up a lot because it's a generic term for a precinct. Got and it. They load them in ahead of the release of the population data. So they're already there in the geography.
Great. Thanks.
Fred, when you talk about being on a laptop or a desktop, what are the requirements for that?
For a county type redistricting, I mean, you're dealing with a far smaller data set than you would for a state. Like when we do California, you're looking at a million plus blocks. When you're doing a county, you're looking at maybe 10,000, 15,000 blocks. And we can handle California on a regular laptop. You wouldn't have any problems doing a county on any computer you have sitting around. Anything with Windows 10, you should be able to do it.
How about Windows 7?
I haven't tried it on Windows 7, to be honest. But, I mean, we can obviously try it. The software is available to be tried, so anybody can download it and try it.
Is it compatible with Macs as well?
Now I'm on a laptop, which is a 13-inch screen, and I admit it's a little hard to read a lot of these numbers
Yeah,
I have other computers with larger screens.
Now, yeah.
Ability to be able to, you know, if I do something on one computer, to be able to switch over and do use that same file on another computer with a larger screen?
You could, and really, even on that laptop, the screen might be small, but you could probably get an external monitor hooked up to it that will be bigger. But definitely going from computer to computer is not an issue. To answer the Mac question, unfortunately, the mapping software only runs on Windows. We have had people use it in Windows emulators, and it actually runs really fast. So unless you have the absolute latest version of Mac, which I think doesn't have a Windows simulator yet, all the other versions do and they work.
Great, thank you.
And that's just a desktop. If you're on the web version of the software, then it doesn't really make any difference what computer you're on.
Oh, right. And so what's the difference between the desktop and the web-based version? Are they similar in terms of functionality? Maybe one is more powerful than the other?
Yeah. For redistricting, you really need a lot of functionality that a typical web user wouldn't. The web application is really meant for the public. Mm-hmm. And the public is not going to understand compactness measures, for example, or how to make maps, or how the spreadsheet is laid out. They're not going to understand a lot of this type of functionality. So in the public version, you really just have a simple assignment tool with a pre-canned spreadsheet. Whereas in here, I actually can add, you know, additional tabs of data. I can look at different types of analysis, create reports for output. So there's a lot of functionality here that we can't really put into the web application.
That makes sense.
Can you export some of this data to an Excel file?
It already is. So this thing that I have right here is already Excel. You can actually see the formulas in it, and I can go into Data Exchange here and actually, I can go to here and just open it in Excel. And then I can share with you guys the Excel. So it looks like this. So it's basically the same thing we were just looking at.
Oh, okay.
And it just comes up in Excel.
Now, can you import Excel spreadsheets in?
Yep, the same way that I just did the other thing. The process is a little bit more involved because I have to tell it which columns that I create means what. So if I call my all persons, you know, the people of the county, then I have to tell the computer that means all persons.
For the comment portion of it, where is that served? That's served on your server for everybody, or is it?
So there's a couple of different options. You can have it on your own server, and we have a number of states, including Arkansas, who did that. Mm-hmm. They set up an Amazon server, and we just put everything on it for them. Or you can go through our server, and everything is. Every client gets subsection on the server. So your stuff isn't going to get mixed in with somebody else's.
Fred, can you talk a little bit about the licensing availability? Is it by number of users, single users, and then compare that to costs?
Sure. So I think I provided you guys some cost for the desktop part of the software.
Is that single user?
It's single person. So if you have two computers, let's say if you have a computer at home and one at the office, there's still one person. So we license it by that. And then on the online stuff, it really depends on what you guys want, whether you want to put your own server in or whether you want to use ours, and how long are you, I mean, I would really recommend using ours because it doesn't make sense to buy a piece of software that you're just going to use for a couple of months or, you know, 3 months of redistricting. So it would be just cheaper to just rent it for that period of time. And depending on that length of time and all that, we can provide you guys with pricing.
So, but you don't offer multiple license for a single software. For example, if all the members of the commission wanted to run a desktop version.
Yeah, we do. We do, and the price drops as you go up.
Okay.
So I provided just the cost of one seat, but if you guys wanted, let's say, 5 seats or 10 seats, the price wouldn't be the same thing multiplied by 10. It goes down considerably as you go up.
And what's the price for one seat?
I think it was 5,200, 5,250. I don't have it in front of me, but it was something in that ballpark.
Okay. All right.
And is that license for a limited amount of time, or does that mean that we can then use the software for as long as we need to?
You can use the software as long as you need to. It's perpetual.
Cool.
Hey, Rob, does the 2010 version we got still work or not?
Ah, yes, actually.
It actually does.
I think it does. I thought it would. Not that we don't want to buy another version, because we do, but my sense would be is that's a good check as whether how long we can use it.
I don't think I actually have the full version. I think I just have LE sitting around somewhere.
Yeah, the part of the reason why we actually completely rewrote the software for this cycle, and the reason we did that is because this software has to last all of the 2020 decade. And I couldn't ask somebody to take software that was written in 2008 and be using it in 2019. So that's the kind of the reason why this is a completely new rewrite for us, because this has to last. Because if there's a lawsuit in 7 years, you guys have to be able to pull this out and all this stuff has to work. And believe it or not, people are in lawsuits right now over the 2010 plan, which makes no sense to me, but whatever reasoning, it makes sense to them.
Makes sense to lawyers.
Yeah, they get paid.
Fred, will we ever have the ability to look at, let's say, Hispanic populations by household or is it just in that census block?
You will never be able to look at the number of Hispanics by household because that would be illegal.
Okay. But it'll show me that per census block?
It will show it to you but for census block. And in fact, I don't know if any of this conversation has made it to you guys. The Census Bureau discovered in the last 3 or 4 years that technically you could reverse engineer the census. So one of the big census no-nos is you cannot identify a single person. You should not be able to identify a single person using census data. So census data needs to be anonymous. And some math professor showed them that by looking at all the various tabulations that they do, if you put it all together and ran it through a big computer, you could technically identify one single individual and how they filled out their form.
Yes, and just so you know, violating that is a $250,000 fine and 10 years in jail, so don't do it.
Yeah. So once they discovered that, they freaked out, and they went about trying to figure out how to deal with it. And so now there's this whole program of randomizing census data in situations where that has occurred. And there is all kinds of debate and all kinds of literature out there between people talking about how this is getting done. It's just worth being aware of it.
I just was wondering if we could use that information so we're sure we don't break up. Let's say, I don't know that there's a lot of neighborhoods, maybe in Kingston or Ellenville, that might have a denser population of some of the minorities, but we wouldn't want to break them up if we can identify them.
Well, you have other tools in that mapping software to make sure you don't do that.
One yeah, we do. And in general, of course, I wouldn't discuss those things too much in open forums because it is actually against the law to draw districts to favor or disfavor minorities.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. That's why they call them interested communities rather than.
Correct. You can care about communities of interest, but if you say something like, as an example, that we would like to create a Hispanic district or we would like to create a Black district, those are definitely like ways of getting in getting yourself in court.
So just a quick comment. Is there any concern, maybe perhaps not in Arkansas, but the sort of using the American Community Survey as surrogate data to start a process? Our concern would be is that the at a block level and particularly even at a track level in Ulster County, the imputation errors are sometimes larger than the population that's recorded.
That's a perfectly good concern. I generally, what I've been telling people is please don't do anything with the 2019 ACS other than look and see in general where things are going to be and start to kind of plan that out so that you're not waiting till if you're compressed for time, you're not waiting till the data comes out and then have to rush. So at least you have some idea of where things are going to go. And in the case of Arkansas, that's exactly what they're doing. Now, the neighbor to the north, Illinois, is actually going to use ACS data, at least that's what they're talking about it, for drawing their plans because wow. their constitution requires that they have plans done by June 1st. Yeah. And based on the last available census data. So that's what they're doing. And it of course creates all kinds of headaches because ACS was created on 2010 geography. We're going to have to move a 2020 geography. So we have to deal with geography alignments. There's a whole mess of things that happen when you do that. But I guess to answer your question is I would use it to see where things are. I wouldn't do anything that's any more than just viewing. And if you guys are in a public forum, I wouldn't even necessarily put plans out because people start to draw conclusions before they really should.
Well, we could use that data to compare with our existing districts to see how the population may have changed, especially if the blocks are the same.
Right. And what I was trying to get to in my email last time was the plus minus factor. You don't know if there is a change. It could be steady. It's within those confidence intervals, so I don't know how telling it would be using it.
I mean, in the case of Arkansas, like when I did these maps, it was kind of nice because we looked at it, and when we looked at it in 2000 and with 2010 data, everything was green, essentially everything was good. And then when we like right now, if I switch this out to like this is the 2019, and you can see some go down, some go up, some are good. And if I go back and look at the just straight up 2010, so you can see everything is good here. So this is the data based on what it used to be. Everything is green, green, green. And then I go in and load in the ACS data, and I can see where things have changed in a very quick way. And that was confirmed by the state because they said, yeah, these districts up here are going to shrink because population has moved up here. The ones down here are going to increase because the population has moved out of here. So the ACS data was able to confirm that, and they could start to make plans.
So how do
does ACS data? I'm sorry. Does ACS data come down to the block level right now or not?
No.
It does not. But what we did for in order to do this analysis is we took it and then we went through a process called disaggregation.
So
we could take it down to the blocks and then back up to all the other to the other levels so that we could actually create a one for one match between the two
So from the commission's perspective, thinking about using ACS data just to even begin to start drawing district lines, that's a tough call from the technical people in the room here. I mean, the data's not.
We're not in a rush, so I wouldn't even do it.
Yeah, that's I didn't want to be that blunt, but. But for me, it's an exercise, but I don't know what conclusions you can draw from it at the end of the day. And we found some of this out when we started to use ACS data for our housing action plan. We're getting questions about pieces of the data that don't affect the entire plan, but they look weird in when you move the geography. If you look at the county geography, it makes sense, but when you move to town geography, people start asking questions. Well, I know there are not 325 people in this particular area. Yeah, you're right, but that's not what the ACS says. Yeah.
Would you expect there to be significant population swings between 2019 when it was collected and 2020 also?
That's also a good question.
I mean, I know obviously Ulster County, we already said that there are increases that that the census maybe didn't pick up because it was done in April. Is that right? But I don't know to what extent there would be changes between the census and when this data was collected itself. Right. It would seem to me that there would be even maybe a reduction.
Right. The census collected on April 1st, and we started becoming like one of the most moved to metropolitan areas after that in the country. We were like one of the top 10 places people were moving to. But so that's completely not captured by the census.
Yeah. And if I can add, it says ACS released in 2019, but it's a 5-year rolling survey.
Yeah.
So you're really looking at 2017 data.
So it may even show. Yeah. So it's just not even data we could really use at all.
Yeah, and it sounds like since we're totally not under a time crunch, it makes more sense just to wait for the actual census data to come out to use, right?
I agree, yeah.
Because don't we have until December 31st, 2022?
No.
Is that right?
July.
July, okay.
July 22nd, I think.
But still in 22.
Yes.
So, yeah. I don't think there's a rush.
You have to hold a public hearing on your plan by May 20th of 22.
That's still a lot of time.
If anything, though, it might be good to get that data into the software if this is the one we purchase, and then we can start playing with it just to become familiar with how it works and the different features. So that when it comes time to actually import the actual data, like we won't share any maps based on our findings, but we can get in and play with the software and see, get a little more familiar with it before we have to start really using it in earnest.
I know Mike Baden is listening to this call. He and I know both did, as members of the public, both played with this program the last time. And I have to say, I thought it was relatively user-friendly from my perspective. And being able to go to the different maps where you could look at the actual pictures of the buildings, you know, in that map, the satellite picture overlay. Because sometimes you'd be like, you know, like, what is this little population center right here? There's like a lot of people in this census block. What is that? I felt the different maps were very useful switching back and forth.
That's good to know. Thank you. That does seem fairly easy, even watching the presentation. Thank you.
I've used it before, though.
Once or twice?
Once or twice, 8 hours a day for the last 2 years.
My issue of warning is that I've seen lots of GIS presentations, and they're all fabulous. You know, click this button and this happens, and click this button and you get these wonderful looking maps. And then you say, well, how can you do this? And that, the answer comes back, well, I'm not so sure. That might be complicated. I've gotten into a couple of situations where it was a real issue to try and get something done once you lay out a real problem.
Well, one thing I'll say is besides writing software, we also do redistricting consulting. Like we actually go in, like we went into the city of Austin and I was the line drawer where I was using the software to draw the districts for them. And what I always say is the worst punishment for a software developer is to have to use his own software. So we tend to try to iron out all the problems that are in it so that we don't get stuck using the software and have problems with it.
So looks like you might be wrapping up. I see Michael Baden. He wasn't sure you were allowing public comment, but if you were, he could add to the discussion or he can email us his thoughts.
I saw that too, and I motioned to allow public comment because I think it would be good to get that information.
I second. Can I?
Yeah, I think the end of our discussion is certainly reasonable to have a few questions come in. Mm-hmm.
So, Mike, can you unmute yourself and talk?
I have. Thank you very much. First, I just want to explain, you probably are wondering who's this guy coming to all our meetings and doesn't he have something more important in his life? I'm the town supervisor, town of Rochester now. Back with the last redistricting, I was not a public official, except I was a member of the county planning board, the Rochester representative. And because of that, I was excluded from being considered for the commission. I had worked on the 2010 census as a regional crew leader and wanted to, census numbers and data like this have always intrigued me. So I wanted to see it come full circle. As Fawn said, I am one of the members of the public who, my public comment at the public, to start with, I attended just about every meeting of the previous commission. My public comment was I spent probably, I bet somewhere in the neighborhood, and Rob can probably correct me, but somewhere in the neighborhood of about 40 or 50 hours in a public computer that the planning department had in their offices. As a matter of fact, one evening, everybody left and forgot I was there until the janitor came in at 11 o'clock and I was still in the back room working on the computer. And we startled each other. So my public comment was 23 maps, one for each legislative district. What I can tell you, I found the software to be extremely user-friendly. Admittedly, having worked for the census, I had a familiarity with census blocks and tracks and things like that. And remember, too, the last group was tasked with going from 33 to 23 legislative districts. So they were starting literally from scratch. They also were not having to worry about voting districts within each town because the Board of Elections was going to be recreating the voting districts based on the legislative districts. So with that being said, a little bit of how I started, I literally went town by town with the idea that there's 23, there are essentially 23 towns and there's 23 legislative districts, and then worked from backwards from that. I tried to look for commonalities of roadways, neighborhoods. It was interesting you mentioned school districts. I tried to look in that, zip codes, those things. And I created 23 voting districts. What I did not do was look at who lived where. I can tell you I caused a bit of an uproar because some of the legislators who were seated who wanted to continue I managed in three or four districts to put two seated legislators in the same voting district. So that did cause a bit of an uproar. And I remember a Saturday working session where everybody wanted to know who the heck is this guy, Mike Baden, and why is he trying to get rid of our legislators? So I make light of it now, but I'm just telling you that these are the commonalities that I looked toward when I created the districts. I'm very happy to say that the end result of what came out of it, it was an awful lot of what I presented remained. As a matter of fact, some of the voting districts were exactly the ones that I had proposed. And I know Fawn did similar to what I did. I think we were the only two people who actually took it to that level.
That's correct.
So I plan to, attend your meetings and just observe because it's a bit of a hobby. I also, now as a supervisor, I sit on the Ulster County Supervisors and Mayors Association, and I've made them aware that I'm doing this. But I can tell you the supervisors have no stake in this, really, because our town boundaries are our town boundaries. So you're not about to change those. So I thank you for letting me talk. And if anybody ever had any questions about the process, I can tell you my ideas. I can tell you, literally, I went census block by census block and just started adding till I got to the magic number and looked for the commonalities within the neighborhoods and the towns.
Yep, and that's the process.
Yeah, I feel better already. Thank you, Mike. That was really great. And I think we definitely use you as a resource, without a doubt. I think I'll speak for myself, a little bit lost with all of this, but to have that kind of experience and coupled with willingness is priceless. Thank you.
Does anyone have any other questions for Fred?
And Fred, you'll be sending us some quotes, a variety of different quotes, right?
Yeah, if you guys give me some ideas on what you're looking for, time, like if you're looking for online stuff, just give me some ideas on what the length of time it is that you want to do it. So if it's from, let's say, I don't know, you said it needs to be done by July. Was that the date you guys set?
The end of July.
End of July. So then let's say how long you want that process to last. Then I can provide a quote. And then if you want desktop, like how many you might want me to quote, I can do that.
I'll put my hand up for a desktop.
Right. Why don't I put something together and then I'll send it out to the commission for some options and you all can review it and then we can send it over to Fred.
So you sounds can. Good.
Thank you, Rob. That sounds good.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Well, thank you, Fred. It was a great presentation. And thank you, Rob and Dennis for putting it together. I appreciate it.
Very well. Have a good night, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks,
bye.
Fred.
Okay. I guess next point of business is the report from the website subcommittee. Regis, do you mind starting it at least?
Sure. Okay.
That'd be great.
Yeah. Thanks, Donna.
Thank you.
What we did over the last couple of few weeks was take a look at what's on the Ulster County website right now. And we looked at all of the links, all of the information. Some of the links were not even openable. Some were very valuable information. We agreed after noodling around that if we had it all in one place, so if we had our own website, our own reapportionment commission website on the county server, of course, that would be I think easy for everybody. So we created, I don't know if you had a chance to look at the materials that Donna, Kathy, and I had sent you. The first was a home page and had a list of vertical links. And what also be on that homepage is just a kind of a welcoming message. I'll just go through this real quickly, and then we can field some comments. We thought in somewhat logical order in looking down that list of vertical links. And so the second one was a citizen's guide. And thank you, Fawn, for sending us that the full Brennan Center report. We did find that link online. So I included that. I included a short version. We found that, and then certainly the full report. So if you lose that big book, it's retrievable with this particular link. And the third element in the citizen guide was something even a little bit more elementary, and that was from dummies.com. The next was the reapportionment link itself, and that was basically the Ulster County Charter, which really lines it all up. That's section C10, so a click on that brings you to that. The next link were FAQs, and these are FAQs that were written a couple of weeks ago. The next was a contact link, and we looked at what's on the website right now, and that seems to work just fine. We liked the fact that it had a USPS address and also an e-address, and I know we talked about, you know, what should we call it for the email. And we kind of like the UCRC, Ulster County Reapportionment Committee. And that's just a suggestion. We don't really have any stake in any of that.
The email address that we talked about last time has been set up. Now, I don't remember. I think it's reapportionment@co.ulster.ny.us.
Oh, it's already set up?
Yes.
Where does it go?
It goes to me.
Okay.
You voted to do that last month, so I went ahead and set that email address.
Oh, we did. Okay.
We just haven't advertised it yet.
Okay. Everybody has to learn how to spell reapportionment.
Exactly what I was
going to say. Yeah. The next was a commissioner's link, and that was bios and a few sentences. We're suggesting three or four sentences on each of us that would be submitted by each of us. We had talked about headshots, and then our committee thought that we'd recommend not having the headshots. So that went down, and we kept the three or four sentence summary of each of us. The next link was when it comes, of course, but the 2020 census data link. And we thought that having the previous 2011. So if anybody wanted to compare the two, they could, but it would feature the 2020 census data. The agenda and minutes link. I mean, Fawn has that very much under control, and to have that all in one place. And it was the same the last time from 2011, and you had that lined up really, really nicely, Dawn, we thought. We had one of the things we had suggested was we spoke a little bit about public input, and we emphasized not just a meeting with legislators and elected officials, but principally hearing from citizens themselves, from people in the county. And we thought, and this is again just a suggestion, that we could probably manage with a couple of commissioners at a time being invited to town board meetings. And so let's say we would ask the town supervisors for about 20 minutes. And so we would make a a brief introduction and just saying this is what we're here for. And if you have any comments, it's just a way of introducing ourselves. People may or may not have comments, unless you live in the town of Rochester, perhaps, redistricting. But if they do, now, fine. If they don't, they'll know exactly where to go. So it's just an introduction. It's hello, how are you? And what would you advise us if you would? So we think that we could accomplish this all within this calendar year if we divided it up, and it would be 20 minutes. And we're assuming, of course, that most town board meetings are going to be held online for the rest of the year. That may not be the case, but, if that is, it's not too inconvenient, and we could set up a schedule with what is convenient for each of the commissioners. So again, that's a suggestion, and that's meeting with all municipalities and putting ourselves out there and as a kind of a listening tour, but also an introduction.
Regis, is that in lieu of us holding our own meetings per se? Like I know that we had discussed at prior meetings that it, you know, maybe we would have Saugerties and Town of Ulster and, you know, another town, invite them to a meeting for public comment, and another few towns at another meeting. Is this in addition to that, or is it in lieu of?
Well, it wouldn't be in addition. it would not be in addition. So either as you're suggesting, we would have three towns. We would invite them to a virtual meeting, we could batch them 2, 3, 4, or we could do it one at a time. So.
I don't have a preference either way. I was just commenting. I think both might be.
Oh no, both of you.
Yeah. Both might be overkill for this volunteer group. Is all I was a little concerned.
Absolutely. So you know, whatever the pleasures of the group is fine. It was just something that we talked about it, and we're putting it out there. And then we have some useful links, and you know, these are things that we had noodled around and found and thought that they were pretty good. And I don't know if you had clicked on any to think that they were worthy of having on our page. A draft plan link, a hearing link, and a final plan link, of course, all to be determined. So does anyone have comments on other than what we just talked about?
I think it's great and very comprehensive. So well done, Regis, Donna, and Kathy. Thank you so much for putting all of this together.
I agree. That was really nice page.
Thank you.
I just learned when we were trying to click on the links at the last meeting, and some of them didn't work, that the county legislature, which you're working under the auspices of the legislature, and the county executive, the operations, the legislature apparently is developing our own website. And although it all looks like it's cohesive right now, ultimately we're doing, some of the links were broken. That's why some of the links were broken. So I can take this draft and give it to the folks that are developing, you know, our website, and see how, you know, they can work it in, or any ideas that they have. And
I think all of this needs to be checked for accuracy too. Sure. And you know, whether in fact it's all germane or it is repetitious. So
but I can give them this to start off, and if they need to talk to, if they need your input, should I put them in touch with our subcommittee for now?
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's not like it's carved in stone. I mean, as we evolve, we can change it.
No.
Things don't work out. They just get deleted and we add other things, but it, you know, it's very flexible.
Exactly. But we have a base. That's all we really want, is a base from which to start.
Yeah, a starting point.
Certainly. I thought it was very comprehensive.
Good. Thank you.
Regis, and a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, thank you, Regis.
And Donna and Kathy, a lot of
teamwork.
That's right.
So do you want me to make a spreadsheet of when all of the towns meet right now? And we could, you know, like see who wants to sign up to go to which towns, board meetings, or, and then we would reach out to the towns to see if it's, you know, if they want us at a workshop or at their regular town board meeting or how they'd like to do it. But would you like me to try to start that off for you?
That would be great. First of all, is everyone amenable to this way of doing it? So each town feels as though that they're getting, you know, the attention of this commission.
Yeah. I think this is a good idea. I think perhaps maybe even by email or offline, we should discuss sort of like a basic talking point so that we all, if we're splitting us up amongst the group, we all sort of are discussing the same thing as we go to these different meetings. That would be my only thing is if it's not the whole group, then each town may get a completely different presentation and not sort of like a, you know, a
uniform. Yeah. Good.
Yeah. Uniform comment. But that could be something we could discuss, you know, via email over the next month, even if necessary.
Sorry.
Otherwise I'm super amenable to this.
That's exactly what I was going to ask.
That's great. Actually, Sarah, we had talked about it, Kathy and Donna and I, and we said, we'll see how this goes this evening. And we would come up with talking points. We would suggest talking points. So the three of us will come up with talking points for your input. But this is what you know, so that we're all on the same page, just as Sarah suggested. But that's something that we had already discussed. So expect that from us shortly.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Oh, I forgot, it's me. Sorry. Okay, our next meeting then we will probably, are we doing this monthly now or did we decide, did anyone, I think someone had spoken last month about maybe skipping a month, but right now I think we need.
It sounds like we're cooking. Yeah, I think we should do another month. Because we have some good progress going, and let's not
put the brakes on.
I could get another demo from another company too next month as well.
Okay, great.
Mm-hmm. Great. So that would be April 14th.
I think
at 6:00.
Great.
That actually might be the worst day of the year for me.
Yeah.
I'll do my best. But yeah, that one might be the worst day possible. But that's okay.
Sorry, we didn't.
No, it's okay. It's not a problem. It's not. If they're not on extension at that point and I'm still having to do them, we got a different, we have a different issue. So April 14th, I'll be there.
Godspeed over the next month, Travis. Yeah,
thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay. Well, Andy will be chairing that meeting and Regis will be our vice chair for that meeting.
Okay. So can I say then that we'll discuss our points of interest to the next. Our talking points for the meetings. For the next meeting, you know what I mean.
Yeah. Have those ready for the next meeting.
Thank you. And anything else anyone would like to discuss?
I wanted to ask the group if you guys would be interested in having a virtual meet and greet with the legislators, because I read the document that Ken shared with us, and it, you know, sort of narrates the process that they went through the last time. And I know we've also talked about not wanting to be influenced by the legislators, but I do feel like maybe we should meet them and just, you know, it would be nice to know who they are. It would be nice to know what their concerns might be that they might have. And whether or not we, you know, end up incorporating that into our final plan, I think it would, more information is better than less. Are other folks interested in that?
Sure, I am.
And we don't have to ask them if they're happy with their
exactly
the way everything was planned out. So
I mean, I actually am curious to know if they're happy or not. I just don't necessarily, I won't let that be the be all end all, but like if there's a big problem that they're aware of, I want to be aware of it too. I mean, if there's a reason for it, great, you know, but good to know.
I sort of wonder if psychologically speaking, it might make more sense just to talk to the towns first so that we're not going into the town meetings with, we go into talking to the legislatures with the ideas from the public rather than the other way around, if that makes sense.
That makes sense.
But otherwise, I am amenable to having a meeting just to meet them and whatnot. I think sometimes like one or the other can influence if you're, I don't mean it in a negative or a nefarious way, but just inherently when you, the first time you learn something, it influences your information gathering afterwards. So
Vaughn, do we have to vote on that or
no?
Okay.
Put on the agenda for next time.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you may want to like invite the commissioners from the Board of Elections at some point, maybe further on in the process.
Okay.
You too.
So that, okay. Any other new business that we want to discuss? Anybody have anything on their mind? Okay. Old business? I know this is so tough. As you can tell, this is not my thing, but.
You're doing great.
I guess I have a question maybe for Fawn. I'm assuming that these meetings are all virtual because the county isn't having any in-person meetings.
Yes.
As we start moving towards a more vaccinated public, do we get a sense of, is there anything on the inside talking about when meetings might be in person? I'm actually fine having them virtually thus far, but just from a planning perspective, as we go through the summer, are we expecting it to switch to in-person? Is there any sense of that at all?
As long as the executive orders keep coming and they're sort of coming monthly at this point, we are gearing up at the legislative office about the potential of having an in-person session possibly in August, September by the fall, but maybe continuing to hold committee meetings virtually for a while. So I'm not sure. As long as the executive orders are in place, we really can't have in-person meetings. So that's been our limiting factor. And we don't often know very far in advance. You know, we're guessing at this point it's going to continue for a couple more months.
And just so you know, those executive orders are coming from the governor. They're not a county executive order. They're coming from the governor's, and they're the executive order basically suspends the open meetings law. And allows you to hold open meetings in via Zoom or via virtually. Once those executive order disappears, you're going to be back to meetings. I mean, you won't have the option of holding a virtual meeting. You have the option of letting people join virtually, but you don't have the option to meet as a board virtually once those executive orders get suspended or get
removed. I just wasn't sure if there was some sense from, you know, the county government level, if they were looking at, you know, suspend or, you know, overturning those orders at some date if everything goes as planned, and that I might not be aware of as, you know, generally a member of the public. So, but good to know. Thank you very much.
If I find anything out, if I hear anything solid, we'll definitely let you know.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
There are a lot of advantages to these remote Zoom meetings. When we go back to real meetings, we're going to miss those advantages.
I suspect the legislature right now allows legislators to attend session via Zoom twice a year, and they can't be back-to-back meetings. That's in the legislative rules. They cannot attend committee meetings virtually. They can listen to the meetings before COVID, they could listen to the meetings like on a phone or something. We had a conference phone, but they couldn't vote. And they have a lot of rules about virtual meeting. I suspect when COVID is over, the legislature may change some of their rules about virtual meetings, but we're being very careful, like doing transcripts of each meeting is required in the governor's executive order. I know a lot of towns are not making transcripts of every meeting. We are, and I think the legislators actually like that and may want to continue that when we're meeting in person. But we certainly can keep doing it if you like it. I think it's nice to have a transcript of the discussion, and we'll see what the future holds. I think a lot of things are going to change after this.
Oh. Interesting.
Yeah, once we get back to the real environment, we're going to want to teach some of the things we've learned how to do.
Sure.
I hope so.
And you may have to consider, like, if we're going to meet in person at 6 o'clock, I'm not sure everybody can get to the county building by 6 o'clock, or, you know, we may have to adjust those things too. But initially we would, Dennis is absolutely right. Initially, when that executive order stops, we would have to meet in person.
Yeah. Well, we really miss all the interaction.
Yeah. And I think unfortunately the rule changes with respect to the executive order is going to have to wait till they actually change the law as well. So it's not just you can just go ahead and just change the rules on your own. The Freedom of Information Law and the Open Meetings Law essentially govern what boards, public boards can do. And so the legislature would actually act, it's not just the county legislature, but your board would be governed by that. And so what ends up happening is they may have to change the law at the state level and to accept remote voting and remote meetings and all those other stuff. I'm not sure we're headed in that direction yet.
Any other business?
Well, I'll move to adjourn if there's no more business.
A second?
Second.
Kathy, thank you. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for being so kind. We did get a lot accomplished. I'm really happy. And again, thank you, Dennis and Rob, for setting that up.
Yep.
Yeah, it looks very interesting. Is that the software you used last time? I guess so.
See you soon.
Yeah.
All right. Good night.
Thanks, everyone. Have a good night.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye.